This podcast is in partnership with Design Biennale Rotterdam, Phoenix Museum, Lack of Guidance, Margreet Olsthoorn, New Institute and Rotterdam Partners, as they all share the common goal to create awareness, share opinions and empower creative growth.
We were like, no man, it's not going to be a sabbatical. We sell everything we have, only keep our books and records and some clothes, and we quit our jobs, and then we just go. What is life? What do you care about? What do you like? And then based on that, you continue. Everything goes hand in hand. And now it's just so little islands everywhere. If I would study again, I would always study two things. I would study something where I learn to make something and philosophy.
In this episode, we're joined by Thomas Verdel, director of Moestuin Vollenhoven, who traded corporate leadership for a life rooted in sustainability and purpose. Thomas shares his journey of selling everything he owned, his two-year motorcycle journey during COVID, and building a regenerative garden. Join us as we explore how leadership, personal growth, and a bold leap of faith shaped his unique path. Hello, good day, Thomas. Welcome in the podcast.
Bas, welcome. Thanks. Nice for being here.
Can you tell us where we are today?
We're at my home in Utrecht.
Where are you normally working?
I'm the owner of a garden, so actually 6 out of 7 days, I'm there.
That's quite a lot of time.
It's a lot, sometimes 7 even, but that's really a decision I made to do this kind of job, and nothing is forcing me to be there. I just want to be there as much as possible.
Can you describe a little bit what the garden does, how big it actually is, because I saw it, and why you like being there?
Yeah, it's like 2 hectares, so that's 2 football fields, and we are selling fresh veggies, fresh produce to end customers, like you and me, people like you and me, in veggie boxes, and we are selling special herbs and edible flowers to high-end restaurants in Utrecht.
For the people who don't know, veggies?
Vegetables.
Vegetables.
Yes, sorry. Yeah, so a lot of different vegetables we are growing and harvesting and then selling in a CSA principle, which stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And that means that you have a subscription with us. So you pay upfront and then you have a kind of contract called, it's more like a social contract, whereby you get a vegetable box for 30 weeks starting in May, but you pay upfront. Most of our investments are in the beginning of the season, like compost, irrigation, improvements, seeds, etc. But since the season has not started yet, often we are lacking the funds to make those investments. And with this system, you ask people, do you trust me that I can actually grow those things and sell them to you? And if you pay up front, then I can actually make this work without me going to a bank and ask for funds. That's the whole system. So it's a system based on trust that we don't screw it up, basically.
And you provide for customers around Utrecht?
Yeah.
And who are those customers?
So that are basically people like you, me, families, people who just want to buy local and super fresh and organic, and which is in season. So everything is homegrown, and we use fresh seeds. So it's really, we don't buy anything. And everything is daily harvested by me and Compagnon Helene. And we have 25 volunteers and 4 interns. So it's quite...
That's a big team.
It's quite a big team, yeah. So we're definitely not doing it alone. That is for those vegetable boxes. And then for the restaurants, it's slightly different products. So it's more the high-end stuff, which is more interesting for them, but also for me. Just to put it in a different perspective, if I load up my van with red beets or I load up my van with edible flowers...
That's the difference.
There's a huge difference in value. Huge difference, yeah. It's better for me and also for the restaurants to work with those kind of products.
And what is better, actually? Is that money-wise or in ambition? And
yeah, I would say that like the margin on those edible flowers is much higher than on red beets. But the whole process around those edible flowers is more difficult. So because you have to harvest them before 9 in the morning, because otherwise it's too hot already outside. You have to pack them and cool them straight away. And if there's a little hole or if there's a bug, then already you can't use it. And everything is organic, so we have that. So quality control is really, really strict. And shelf life is like 1 week, which is quite a lot for flowers. That's because everything is organic and picked very early in the morning. So the process is very strict, which also makes the margin a bit more higher. And I think the combination between veggies and those edible flowers and special herbs is a golden opportunity for gardens like this, because you have your funds in the beginning of the season with those boxes, and you are doing just the big veggies like the potatoes, the cauliflowers, etc. And then on top of that, you have your weekly sales, which you do with the restaurants. I wouldn't do different. I wouldn't go for only restaurants or only veggie boxes. I think this is a really nice addition to each other.
I'm just still memorizing about the fact that you have to pick flowers before 9 o'clock.
Come on, seven actually.
Seven actually?
Seven, yeah, mostly it's seven in the morning. Yeah.
But just to imagine how fragile it is. And it feels like, on one hand, you're a farmer and gardener who is doing the beets and the potatoes. And then all of a sudden you're a surgeon.
Yeah, it's a really different skill. Also, if I know exactly who is good at doing what in my business. So I can't ask everyone to pick those flowers, because if you leave your harvesting box in the sun, it heats up. And if you then harvest and you put your harvested flowers, which you harvest at the right time, but your box is in the sun, then already it's done. So your box needs to be in the shade. Your cooling tray needs to be in the shade. And you need to always stand so that you block with your own body the sun, so that those kind of things. And that is just experience. And you need to pick as quick as possible and always use both hands for harvesting. Most people, you only harvest with one hand because you are right or left-handed. But you're twice as fast, almost, if you harvest with two hands. So that also takes some years of experience, but then you're pretty fast in harvesting those containers with those flowers. Yeah,
that's quite some pressure.
It is, yes. It is quite. That's why some people don't like this, because it's so fragile. And then when you go to your chef, you know, they're always under pressure, those guys. And we are, of course,
chef of the restaurant.
Those guys are under pressure, and of course they like me because we have special products. But in the end, you're a supplier. And they don't know the whole process, which came from making a planning, then dropping the seed in the ground, then harvesting this whole process. And I do the deliveries by myself on every Tuesday and Thursday. In the end, what they see is just a container with flowers. And if it's then bad, they just punish you on the spot. Although the whole process takes months, that last day is actually where it comes down to, you know?
It's like a normal customer.
Yes, but then really, really strict, because it's like three strikes, you're out. That's a bit the golden rule with working with those restaurants. Yeah, so if you make a mistake, of course, we are all human. Happens, stomachs is okay. The second one's like, not so cool. And then the third time, you're out, and they just go for a different supplier.
How many stressful drives did you have on a Tuesday and Thursday?
Not so many nowadays. As long as I can do a quality check of all the containers we have. And now we are approaching the size of containers where it's impossible to do this check. So I need to trust the people that they harvested it correct. And that is the phase we will enter now, 2025. And that will be more stressful. So I just want to be like this 100% quality control guy, that everything is good. I don't want to lose my customers. And I can only do this by having good people and trusting them that they picked the right stuff and that they also harvested in the right way.
It's a thin line, because you don't want to lose your customers, but also not your employees or your volunteers.
Yes.
And volunteers is different, not in effort and ambition and support.
My volunteers are only harvesting vegetables. It's easier, the fennel and tomatoes, those things you can't really mess up. Plus, quality control for vegetables to our end customers for the boxes is different than for restaurants. I would say if there's a little stain on a fennel, it's okay, you know, or if it's a bit dirty, it's okay, because the people wash it at home anyway. But for restaurants, it's not the case. So there I only ask my interns to help with the harvest.
Do you ever have sleepless nights?
No. No.
Lucky you.
Yeah, pretty lucky. Yeah, I think, first of all, I work outside. I do work I really, really love. It's just so much already, which gives me joy. Being outside, feeling the weather, that has such a calming thing. All that business stuff around, I can switch this on and off. I'm always on, but I don't bring it with me. When I lay in the bed, most often 30 seconds, and then I sleep. Like literally like this. And it's always every day.
I can imagine a lot of people have the same because they're just tired of the day.
Yeah.
But then they wake up during the night and they think like, how was my day? Because they didn't process it and start. Do you have any tips?
Well, I do yoga. That helps. I started doing this pure for physical exercise because we're bending a lot, you know. It's quite a physical job we have in the garden. And when I was traveling, I met this guy and he had this garden. And I was always a guy who was doing fighting sports, you know, like boxing and judo. And I did some MMA even for a short while. Then I switched to CrossFit. So I was always those explosive sports. When I traveled, I met this guy and he said he did yoga. I was like, dude, no, man. Because it was in my mind was yoga, something else. And then I did it with him and I was just like super happy I found something like this. First of the stretches and then also for this mental reflection. When you're really into this yoga session, you become so clear-minded, and that's really nice. And then you set your intentions for the day, so you make kind of day planning while doing this. So it takes only 30 minutes, but after this, it's like he explained this as a shower for your mind. And I really like that idea, because we take a shower for our body, but how do you clean your mind? This helps me a lot.
Was it easy to learn it?
Yes, it is easy. I don't have to really think about it. I just do it. I don't know how that works with me, but I like it. So I did it for the first time 4 years ago. And since then, I think I skipped maybe 20 mornings in almost 4 years. And it's just how it works, because I know it is good. I like it. So I do it. Only when I have a little party the day before, then I skip it. But for the rest, it's just me here in the morning breaking my back. And then I'm in the garden starting at 7. Most people are still sleepy. They come in and I'm already like super fresh. Did my mind cleaning and ready to go at it.
Shall we go a little bit back in time to come up how you went into gardening? Yeah. Can you share a little bit the roadmap where you come from, what you studied, worked and what change you made?
It's actually funny to be back in Utrecht, born and raised here, but I moved when I was 19 to Rotterdam, and there I studied business administration, and then I studied philosophy. When I was almost finishing my bachelor, business administration, because I was just this business type of guy, you know, that's always how I pictured myself. I was a bit disappointed in the material and the people, and I remember this episode. I would just give, with this, what happened, he just lost his whole generation of people. I remember we had, there was this bachelor course, was financial risk management. And we were having some mitigation process about risk based on Lehman Brothers, who went bankrupt. So one of the students asked the professor, so professor, why are we learning stuff about risk management, which is based on methodology from Lehman Brothers, who went bankrupt because of this stuff?
Good question.
Yeah. And the professor said, this is just how it works. This is how it is. So with this sentence, I think he lost 300 students. Like, okay, man, so this is not what university should be like. So then a friend of mine said, let's join a philosophy course. It's like, I don't know, man. Like I thought about yoga, I thought about this, and then I joined. Super, super interesting, man. That was the first time I really felt this is what university should be like. So when I walked into this course, I sat down. There were only 25, 30 students. The professor looked at me. Hey, new face, who are you? Oh, my name's Thomas.
What did you think of the material?
Now, in business administration, never, ever did someone address you or ask how did you find the material. And with this, I was like, okay, I didn't read it. Okay, you didn't read it, but why are you here? Do you think you can follow this course without reading the material? For who are you doing this? I was just...
Good question.
Yeah, I was so nice.
Again.
So then I did a bachelor in this, and then I went back to business administration and finished my master, and then I did master in philosophy. So now I could show the world that I can think in a business way, hence the business administration, and for my personal development, I did the philosophy. With this being graduated, still I was still thinking about I need to fit the program, and that means you get a good job at a big firm. So I applied for an internship at Philips in Eindhoven, and then I moved to Eindhoven, and I worked there for almost 6 years in the procurement department.
Why Philips, and why? Because you said I needed to fit like a prof.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I was still, although this philosophy was really good for my mind, I was still thinking about I need to make money. I want to be a corporate guy and suit and tie and traveling. I don't know. Still, I had this feeling this is what I wanted to do.
Or what people want you to do.
No one and everyone. Basically, it's just what society thinks. Definitely, when you study business administration, you know, you're kind of, you're not brainwashed, but it's really pushing you to the big four consultancies and the big firms, you know. And they always mention that you better start with a big firm if you want to go to a startup. From big to small is easier than the other way around. Although I never pictured myself in a big corporate firm. Much more startup style guy. But because that's not smart for your career, it's better to start at a big firm. So that's actually how it went. I did an internship. Terrible. Really didn't like it. But then I met one guy and he was really nice. He was an old plant manager from Philips and they always have a certain status. But the factories are all closing in Europe. Yeah, he was from Belgium. And he really brought me on board in this whole corporate thing. And I learned a lot from this guy, and which I still apply every day. Basically, he was really into this Lean Six Sigma thing, because you need this in companies and definitely in a plant where everything is really Lean Six Sigma based on Toyota. In office environment, it's quite different, but I was visiting a lot of factories because I was working for the procurement department, so I did a lot of supplier visits. It started with seeing all kinds of lines on the floor, like yellow tape, red tapes, and flags. I was like, what is this? And then he explained, yeah, this is Lean Six Sigma. I really like that. So I really went into this. Also because I recognized this from my days when I was working in a restaurant. And there, everything is also Lean Six Sigma without me knowing it was this. You know, the knives are always in the same drawer. Everything is always on the same spot. And now this was the same, but then in a huge scale, huge factories. I've been everywhere over the world, seeing massive factories. And
what is massive?
It's like...
How many people, for instance?
Yeah, like thousands and thousands of people. And I went to often in Poland. There I had a couple. And there were like steel factories and glass factories, really, really, which were now on the point of collapsing, yeah, because all those heavy industries pushed more east or to China. And it was quite impressive. So I did their trainings. And at one point, I was also this lean master, and I could also give advice to people how to improve your processes. And that is something I apply every day still, like in my own personal life, but definitely in a garden. You need to do really Lean Six Sigma because it's so big. And if you forget your shovel and you're at the other side of the farm, and this is just like 50 minutes, you know, for that. Then you can't do this. Imagine everyone has this, 25 people times 50 minutes. That's too many minutes. Yeah, you can't do this.
That's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So
how do you incorporate such a process? Because I can imagine that for a lot of people, this method is new.
Yeah.
So when you introduce this in a corporate world, okay, it's familiar, but in a garden... Then everyone is like, oh, this is super corporate.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't even want to think about it.
Yes, it was quite hard in the beginning and was a lot of pushback. So I really thought about how can I introduce this way of thinking without their having the feeling they need to change the way of working. So when I started there, the garden was already there. The biggest mess was the tool shed, so where all the shovels and the hoes and everything was. And every day the people were looking for their hoes and their things. So I noticed that I think on average people were looking for 5 minutes to find the right
tool.
So then I just cleaned everything up. I made special racks where you can put all the hoes in one rack, all the brooms in one another, and et cetera, et cetera. And they were so happy with it. So, oh man, finally I can find everything, you know? And that is something, when they noticed that this really improved their quality of work, then I slowly started introducing more and more things. And this was a really physical example. But the next step is that you do also process work-related improvements. For example, in planning-wise, that today, Monday, Tuesday, we only work in this area of the garden. Wednesday, Thursday, we only work in that area of the garden. You get just assigned to a special part of the garden and you give the responsibility to those people. This is just your responsibility to clean this. And that is so nice because you have like a job which you can finish within the few hours they are in the garden. And every year we are improving this. You need to be on the edge of like too corporate, too much. They don't like it. If you work with targets, they're out. They don't like that. If it's too clean and too strict, they don't like it. But you need to find that sweet spot between giving them the responsibility and being too corporate. It's somewhere in the middle.
How did you learn this? Because it didn't happen overnight, I can imagine.
No, it took definitely 1 year. It's just by trial and error. Because when I started this, they really didn't like me. And I never worked with volunteers. When do you work with volunteers? I never did. I only worked with high-paid people. And now I work with 25 volunteers.
What is the difference? Because they're, in general, human and they want to help.
Yeah, I think that volunteers, to motivate them, it's really different because there's no money in the game. There's no money. They are just here to have a good time and to feel appreciated. So it was for me quite hard in the beginning to find how to address those people. Really hard, because I always worked with targets, always worked, whether I was a student or working in the big corporate or working in the kitchen, everything was like target driven. And now it's really different. So I think after 1 year and had a lot of feedback sessions with them, how they experienced working with me, I learned a lot from that, yeah. So I really need to stay open also and learn their feedback. And quite often it's good, sometimes it's also not good, then you just don't use it, then you know it. But I think 95% of the stuff they say, it's pretty good. Does it always fit with this whole Lean Six Sigma approach? No. But I think most of the things you can incorporate in such a way they recognize their feedback and you can just do the thing you want to do.
Do you also have the feeling that the culture of you all working together grows in a positive way?
Yeah, definitely. Again, coming back to those, how do you motivate people? They work for a company. Yeah, I'm a company. They're the volunteers. So how do you get that team together? In the beginning, they were really afraid that they would be exploited since they are volunteers. But now they see that because there is some money, things become much more easy. Someone asks, I need a new scissor to prune the grapes. I buy a new scissor. Okay, man, I have an allergy for this kind of cookies. Literally, that's the level I'm sometimes at. I buy gluten-free cookies, you know, all those things which were impossible when there were no money, now is possible. So everyone can be heard. And if they miss something, I can just fix it because there is money. And now they see also the positive effect of having the money there instead of just only struggling for that. And that is really nice to see. So you see that because we are making revenue and we are actually making money, they are also enjoying their work much more, while they actually thought the opposite, because they thought they would be exploited with me and my colleague making money because of their volunteership in the garden. But it's complete opposite. But it takes time for them to realize this. And of course, there's a limit. If I would buy now the newest fancy car, you know, and come there in fancy clothes, then, which would never be my aim, but then it will change. Yeah? So I need to stay basic.
Before we go back to your roadmap, what gives you the most joy after a couple of years running the garden, overcoming certain struggles? What is the biggest achievement?
I think showing the world that you can be sustainable and sufficient in a financial way. So often those two topics are split. So you need a lot of extra money from the government or different things to make your sustainable goals, because otherwise you can't make it financially. But for us, it actually goes hand in hand. Because we are working in a sustainable way, we can make money. And that is something which is so nice. So I can show the world that with this, I can increase soil life, I can increase biodiversity, and I can pay myself already in the second year a normal income. That is great. Because if you ask a typical farmer in the Netherlands how much money they get from the government in tax reductions and subsidies and all those kind of stuff, and we get zero. Every euro is made by ourselves. I think that is really, really nice.
Let's go back to Philips. I know you a little bit, and I know people around you, and everyone always had the feeling like, Thomas, he worked quite hard for it, but at this moment he has it all.
Mm-hmm.
Double master,
mm-hmm.
Working for Philips, good position, income, settled, partner. And then all of a sudden you mentioned to me, I don't know, I have questions. Like your philosophy studies, mm-hmm. asking questions on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe a little bit this period, this phase, what it did to you?
Mm-hmm.
For those who might think, listening, I have it all, but I don't feel like.
Yeah, sure. So I think it doesn't matter in which phase of your life you are, but I was approaching 30. Most of my friends were getting married, buying houses, getting kids, all things I also see myself doing. But I didn't see myself doing it at that time in the situation we were currently at, yeah? But what then? No clue, because I always did what I thought I had to do, and I was quite happy. And I traveled with friends, and I studied also a year abroad. So I did this whole traveling. I noticed I liked the traveling. My girlfriend was also a bit like, is this the life we want to lead? So then we said, let's take a sabbatical. Yeah, we take a nice sabbatical for half a year. We rent out our apartment. We had nice apartments in Rotterdam, and we store our goods in somewhere, and then we travel. For
is that an easy choice? I can imagine that a lot of people think like, if I go away, people take my job, life is going on, but I'm not part of society.
For me, not really hard, no. But for my girlfriend, it was way more. She was really, oh yeah, like those doubts about what do people think of me? Do I still have my job? And can I settle back? Or maybe I don't like to leave everything behind. But for me, it's not, basically. So I always wanted to travel, but I never knew when and how. And this was at one point the moment, this was it, you know.
For you.
Yeah, yeah. It was just there.
How do you have this conversation at home?
Actually, quite easy, because she was eventually exactly like I was. She just wanted to leave. Really ready to go, you know, challenging the status quo and doing this together. So after a couple of months, we were like, no, man, it's not going to be a sabbatical. We're going to basically quit everything. We sell everything we have, only keep our books and records and some clothes, but for the rest, we don't need anything. And we quit our jobs, and then we just go. And the idea was to go overland the old Silk Road with a Defender or a Toyota Land Cruiser. So we were saving money for that. But then we went to this event, which was apparently organized by people who drive motorbikes. We didn't know. So we came there in our car, and then we saw people motorbikes everywhere. We're like, amazing, we can do this trip on a motorbike. So I still remember we are driving on that camping, and I see everywhere those roaring BMWs, KTMs, all those off-road bikes, Hondas. I was like, man, yes, this is it. And Tessa, my girlfriend, was like, ah, shit, no. Because we both saw the same object, a motorbike, but our thoughts were like completely the opposite. But anyway, 3 weeks after that event, I had my first lesson, driving lesson, because I never did that. And then a couple of months later, I bought my first motorbike, an off-road Honda Africa Twin from 1991. Really old school off-road bike, super nice. Then it took a year for Tessa also to get her license, and we bought her bike.
Big shout out to her.
Definitely, man, because it's not always easy, a motorbike. It's quite scary in the beginning. Quite vulnerable on this motorbike. But in the end, she accomplished, and we bought a Honda Transalp, which is the little sister from my version. Then we sold everything, and the idea was to stay with my parents for 1 week between leaving our own place and then the departure. And then in that 1 week, COVID lockdown started. And yeah, that was quite shitty because we saved for like 2 years, basically, from when the idea was born to actual leaving. It's like 2 years, yeah. So the first year, you have this plan, you're saving a bit of money. We're going to do this, yeah, but you still go to restaurants and you buy new clothes, you do your thing. So saving is not really that big. Then we had those motorbikes. And we did one test holiday. Most people do this to check, do you actually like this? Do you have the right gear? So we went to France for 3 weeks to check everything. It was terrible. Everything broke down. Both bikes were in the garage for 2 weeks of the three. So we couldn't even ride because they were just like not properly prepared. We had shitty tent, we had shitty everything. We came back after 3 weeks. We looked at each other and said, this was the best holiday we ever had. It was so nice. This freedom, this idea of just going with a tent, a little stove, everything. And then we really took it really serious, you know. We saved all our money, not going to restaurants. Also just for, you know, when someone was the birthday of someone, you just give like a secondhand book of €5 instead of a nice bottle of wine of 30, 40 euros. Those kind of things. Every summed up, and then we saved a shitload of money in really short period. I also learned a lot from that. That period, we were super happy already without us spending all that money on nonsense, yeah? So back to my parents, and then we couldn't leave. That was quite sad. That's, I think, the last time I cried, you know, that we couldn't leave because we did so much effort in doing this, and we had no house, we had no job. The only thing we had was two fully prepped bikes with all our stuff and a good savings account. That also makes it easier. Yeah, then we were on television and the whole Netherlands could see how sad our story was because we couldn't leave. It was quite big news. It was funny, but it was also sad. But it was not so sad as the rest of the world because it was during COVID. So there were a lot of people dying and suffering. So our story was sad, but nothing compared to the suffering which was going on in the world. So, and then a friend of mine called me and said, you can work on farms for room and board, which is called WOOF, Worldwide Opportunities Organic Farming. And those farms are still looking for people. And the borders with Germany were closed and with Belgium. So we looked for a farm in the Netherlands. And we found actually a couple. And then we just drove there on our bikes. And then we worked on a vineyard for a month, learning about grapes. That was in the beginning of April, so there was a lot of pruning. And we loved it. We just, wow, man, it was so new to us being outside every day. I remember we had to prune 10,000 grape plants. And I had an infection in my right underarm because of clipping. You know, those scissors, it's quite heavy, those pruning scissors. And we had to do 10,000 plants. My arms are not used to that. I did love sports, but just that repetition. The muscles in my lower arm were just infected because they were...
like a tennis arm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. By just pruning, I was like, what a weak guy I am. I need to prune a couple of grapes. Oh, my arm. Anyway, we loved it. And then we went back to my parents. And then we found a second farm. There we stayed for 2 months, a bit longer. And there I learned a lot about this whole restaurant business. I met a lot of people. It was a nice time. And then the borders with Germany opened. And then we went to Germany. And basically, this is how we did it for 2 years. So 3 months of work, 3 months of travel. 3 months of work, 3 months of travel. And in the beginning, we didn't know anything about this whole farm thing. We just went there because we had to kill our time, basically, because all the borders were closed. But then at one point, we were like realizing, this is quite nice. And there is a lot of knowledge there we don't know. So we came into this whole new vibe of those farms and the way they were operating was just so new and fresh to us. They were like families living there and they had employees and they were like this regenerative agriculture type. So refocusing on soil life and biodiversity. And so those farms looked so different than what I thought a farm was, which is just big fields with one crop. No, man, they had like 100 different plants in the garden, in rows, really Lean Six Sigma. I spotted it right away, which I really loved. And everything was so well planned and they were economically very strong. They ate the best organic food and they had the best time in their life. So I was like, this is amazing. And then we started reading about this. And then at one point we came into this funnel and we met a lot of people during COVID. So everything was closed. So that was also interesting. And then we were just reading a lot of books, like, okay, we want to know more about self-sufficient and how it is to be off-grid, meaning not connected to water and electricity. And then we found a farm in Slovenia. They were simply never connected to water and electricity. So there we stayed there for 3 months to learn everything about how you can be self-sufficient. This is terrible. You don't want to be like self-sufficient. That's also what we learned. That is not for us. But it was interesting to see how that actually works. And that's how we basically then programmed our whole trip. So we found a topic we liked. We found a farm which was doing that. And then we just read all the books related to that topic. That completely changed our lives, like completely, those 2 years. And then after 2 years, we came back and yeah. Now I have my own garden.
What a story.
Yeah, it was quite nice, yeah. If I think of the most happy days in my life, often I think back of those days, yeah? The freedom, all the nice people we met, and not only physical freedom, but also the freedom of your mind, whereby you step out of the dogmatic ways of thinking, you know? Like you have certain templates where you think and act, and those are just not relevant anymore. They always stay a bit relevant, but like not that dominant. When you are traveling, especially on a motorbike, and then you just, yeah, you basically lose yourself in certain ways, yeah? Like a snake, basically, who loses its skin. He is still the snake, but he has a new skin. And that is also what we experience. So in the core, you know, our core values are quite unchanged, but how we are standing and thinking about the world, you know, that's really different now.
Two questions. Did you want to go back home to, for instance, Utrecht? And secondly, was it easy to be among the people that you knew before you left?
So the first thing, did I want to come back? Yes. At one point, just had the urge to construct, to build something myself, to start something. I never, in such a way, made something physical. Like those farmers had, they actually produce something. That's also something I realized during that trip, that what makes you happy is to actually make something, to produce something. And I never produced something. Everything was thinking, but actually making something with your hands and seeing the end product, whether it's a couch or whether it's a fennel. That was, for me, the reason to come back. That traveling is really nice and I would do it again. But at one point we were a bit done with, oh, there's another mountain range. Oh, there's another abandoned village. Oh, there's another nice local dish. I loved it all, but at one point, it was just a bit of the same.
And it's quite a lot of new things.
Yeah.
It can overwhelm you.
Exactly. After 2 years, it's a lot, you know. So we were just done, basically. Yeah. So when we came back and met the people 2 years later, and that was quite a shock, to be honest. Yeah. Again, you're kind of the same, but then not again. So I was completely changed how I looked. So I shaved my hair because with the helmet, long hair was not nice. I think I lost like 10 kilos or so. Not because I was fat, but because I didn't do CrossFit. So I lost all those 10 kilos of muscle, of all those deadlifts I did in the past, which are completely unnecessary. To do 200 kilo deadlifts, you don't need 200 kilo deadlift in your life, man. Of course, it feels nice, but no. So we became very slim, you know, very outside people. We always slept in a tent. And then we were suddenly fully in this organic food and not giving a shit about your clothes. No, like those things. Quite funny. In 2 years, yeah? Goes quite fast then. Especially that it was COVID. So when we came back, COVID was kind of, people were starting to get the vaccines, you know, vaccinations. And we also then, when we were back in the Netherlands. So people, their lives was paused for 2 years. They basically were unchanged, except the fact that they had like terrible 2 years because they were locked inside. We had the best 2 years of our lives and completely changed. And then we saw everyone who were just basically on hold for 2 years. That was quite interesting. And it was also very, very hard to express what you experienced and then also, you know, share your new vision of life. It's impossible.
Did you feel a lot of friction?
Yeah, I lost some friends. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Also, in the beginning, I really wanted to, impose my opinion upon people that this was the way forward, how I thought now this is how it should be, you know, and you're all fools if you don't do it. Of course, that is not smart. Also, learned quite fast after that. And I always say to people when I tell this story, it's like a lot of doors closed in my life because of this, a lot.
What kind of a doors, for instance? Friends, you...
Friends, but also just a very easy thing, like retirement funds, those kind of things, you know? When you work for a company, you don't have to think of it. They just, every month, a little money is put aside. That's 5 years ago. I stopped, you know, when I turned 30, now turning 36 in a couple of months. So that's 5 years. I didn't save anything. Yeah, it's all in the business. So that door is definitely closed. Also, the door is closed that I could ever work for a big firm again. Never say never, but I don't imagine myself doing stuff I really don't agree with on the level of society, how you deal with others, how you deal with the environment in a sustainable way. I could still do stuff which I don't really like. That's fine. I can just switch that part off and just do the work. But I can't do stuff which is not agreeing with my standards. And that's also something completely new. I never was like that.
Does it scare you in some way or give you a lot of motivation?
Motivation more. It's not even a philosophical question, but it's more like, what is life for you? What makes you happy? And those questions we always ask ourselves. In a liberal world, you can do whatever you want as long as you be happy. But we have zero clue because we're always doing the same things, seeing the same people and not actually adding value to anything. And if you ask people, why are you doing certain things? Oh, I just need to make money. I just need to pay my rent. I just need to do that. But what makes you happy? Why are you here? You know, like really basic questions. Hardly people know. And now I know because of this trip and I lost that part of me. But this doesn't mean it cannot be changed. That's also nice. It's not that this is now written in stone. For now it is. But life is makeable, you know? So where are we in 6 years? I don't know. Maybe then something else. But I think that the certain ways of life I have now, like treating people with respect, taking care of the environment, eating organic, giving organic food to my family, produce stuff, make things yourself, be a producer, not a consumer. that is something I will always carry with me, basically.
Do you also feel responsible for this generation and the next?
Yes, 100%. 100%. I don't know if I can do a lot, but you know, we are all responsible. And I understand also the argument that you're just an individual, and if you change your behavior, it doesn't matter for the whole group. But I think that's also a certain type of cynicism, whereby if everyone says this, it stays the same. And that's not really motivating. It's also very boring then. You doesn't matter whatever you do, because it always stays the same. I don't believe that. If you really want to make a big change in the society, then we have to look at the big corporations, the big 1%, basically. Definitely. But still, if everyone here does their best, also that makes a big change. Yeah.
You described earlier that you had a professor in business administration who gave an answer where he lost 300 students, mm-hmm. most likely. And that for that reason, one of your friends said, let's go to philosophy. Yeah. How important was that moment, actually, to have the philosophy and learn more about questions, personal development? How much do you carry with you of that study?
A lot. So if you think about like the fundamental knowledge, I lost most of what I actually learned there. You know, I have a big closet with books. If I open them, maybe I recognize stuff, but most of it, it's just lost in the last few years because it was not my priority. But that life and the stories we tell about ourselves are just stories, you know, that is for me really important. So if I would study again, that's also something I ask myself often after graduating, I would always study two things. I would study something where I learned to make something, and philosophy. So I would not study then business administration or economics or something like this, but more like biology or physics, where you actually learn how stuff works. And then I would study philosophy to put everything into a perspective, in a context. And that's actually also how the university started years and years ago, like hundreds of years. You had to start with philosophy to find out what is life, what do you care about, what do you like, and then based on that, you continue. Everything goes hand in hand, and now it's just so little islands everywhere. Also, that often when I tell people I study philosophy, they're like, "No, you? That is just why you are really not this philosophical type," which I'm not at all. You know, I never think about those bigger things, but. For me, it's very practical. It was a very practical study as well. And I carry this with me every day and always when I read books and have conversations with people. And also what's the purpose of life to get to that? I also have this whole vision, which I learned in philosophy, which gives me how to see life. Like you can fully believe in science or fully believe in God and I have just my way of seeing the world, whereby I'm like completely responsible for everything which is around me.
You also described when you came back that people saw you different because you were different. Doors closed, friends lost. Did you also had the feeling you were a little bit of an outsider because you thought so different?
Yeah.
And how do you deal with those situations where you're somehow maybe a little bit too extreme, but called an outcast because you do it so different than society?
Mm-hmm.
How do you still keep the confidence of believing in yourself?
Don't focus on the doors which closed, but focus on the doors which just opened. And that is focus on the things you know you like now. And that is by meeting new people. And it goes quite easy when you have your new ways of life. So focus on those opportunities. And there are so many. And life is so big. There's so many things that for me, it was in the beginning, certain doors were closed. And if you focus on that, it's not nice. But there's so many doors which opened. So just focus on that. and start building. That was for me the most important thing. You need to keep moving. You always need to act. If you stay at home and try to reconnect with those friends, family members, and try to tell your story, and they just stop you because they don't believe it or whatever, why would you bother? Then look for people and opportunities who are with you in this phase of life. And there are so many of those people as well. So that's basically how I did. So I met so many new people who were also thinking like that. And that's really, really interesting. And then you get this whole craftsmanship network idea whereby you collect people around you who are like-minded. Instead of drowning in cynicism, they are now producing stuff, whatever it is. And that's really nice, this whole network idea.
Do you also feel relieved?
Yeah, maybe in a certain way that I'm much more content in life, although I never saw myself as a guy who was complaining, but I have people around me, they said, man, you're much more happy now. You're not complaining a lot. Although I never experienced, but if they say, then probably it's true, huh? So it is kind of relief that you have, I would say purpose. I don't really believe in purpose, so that makes it for me more easy. But I'm more relieved that I know what I like for now. That is really nice. That, again, what we said, if in our society you can be wherever you want, you can do whatever you like, but if you don't know who you are, you don't know what you like because you're always constantly doing the same things, it's very hard to then be happy.
Are you a mentor to others?
Not in such a way, but I do have my interns at the garden, and they are often a couple of years younger than I am, but not so much, maybe like around 30. They have the same experience as I had. They are approaching 30, they're doing things, they don't know exactly how the things they are doing fits with their vision. So they want to do more for the environment and then working outside. So they're doing an education to become an organic farmer. And we are then this company where you can do the internship. So I think I had 12 interns now in 2 years. I hope, and I think I can provide them some of the lessons I had in life. I always take a lot of time also for them to discuss also their private things. That's also something I really learned, is that in Philips, everyone's suit, tie, you only know their name. Yeah, I was with guys in the same room for 6 years. I just know their name. Yeah, with this, with the life we have now, you really need to show an interest in people the other way around. It's like a small family, and that gives you a lot of support. So I really try to help my interns as much as possible. And it's the small things, like I have quite often famous chefs coming to the garden. I always introduce them, not as an intern, but just as someone who is working in my garden. And then maybe I can connect them in such a way, and just opening up my network and my knowledge for everyone. I'm very transparent about that. Hopefully with this, they take that with them and do the same. Yeah, so that everyone just aims to be a bit better instead of, again, making those little islands and protecting desperately what you have so others can't copy you.
Is this something you experienced and why you want to do it different?
Yeah, definitely. At another place I worked, very protective and kind of backstabbing. Of course, in a big company, it's also everything's about legal and IP and those kind of things. And I understand that's the whole business model, but it's also just a lot of noise and not adding value, all those things, you know. In the end, it's just about building stuff and not. If people copy you, then the thing you did is probably pretty good because they're copying it. And if they then buy other stuff, then your product is not so good anymore because they're not buying it from you. So if people ask me, oh, maybe all those interns will just take over all your restaurants and they will take over your customers. They know exactly now how to start a garden and do the whole sowing and harvesting of all your products. I don't see that as a problem at all. If the restaurants will buy somewhere else, then I did something wrong. So it's just self-reflection. oh, is my quality not good? Am I an asshole? Am I too expensive? Those are the things I need to look at.
A lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Full week of work and thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Can you still manage to process everything and not lay awake at night?
No, this is just constant.
Yoga.
Yeah. It just keeps on going. It keeps on going. Yeah.
And you're a parent?
Yes, a little son of 1.5 years old now, yeah.
Has that also changed you?
Yeah, in a certain way, but I don't know, maybe because we are a bit older already, or about old, 35. Of course it changed, you know, you appreciated the childhood and the baby things, but not so much. The only thing, maybe I want to do a little better in the way that I just want him to eat really organic. And I'm not this guy who's really focusing only on this. He can eat whatever he feels like. But more showing that, you know, you don't have to be so serious about everything. I mean, I just want to have a good time with friends and family and being outside a lot, eating good stuff, honest stuff, stuff we produce ourselves, bake our own bread, all those things. They give so much value to life. So this is something I want to push more. It's more important now because it's a bigger thing, you know.
Do you have a mentor yourself, or did you had before?
Not really, no. But I did meet certain people in certain phases of my life, and then I always stick to them. With this plant manager at Philips, and there was another guy I also met there, was also kind of inspired me. And then during that trip for 2 years at all those farms, I learned different stuff. So it was not specific persons, but more contexts which inspired me, whereby I learned, you know, in a very simple example. We worked for a couple of months in Corfu on an organic olive farm. And when I came there, the farm was really nice, but they had this huge mass of this scrap heap with all kinds of metal parts. And it just was just like this terrible mess. I was like, man, we have to clean this up. And he said, no, man, this is our workshop. And I was just seeing only shit. And then he said, okay, man, let's build something. And then we started cutting steel out of it, and we were building a harvesting machine. We were building an olive press. We were building all kinds of stuff from that metal which was laying there. So now I finally understood that all that shit which was laying there was actually their building material. And with that, I also completely changed my whole idea of how you view materials and what you can do with things instead of it's scrap, you need to trash it. No, man. Or you fix it or you make something else out of it. And that's definitely something we are applying every day also in the farm. We are building everything ourselves from all kinds of materials.
Let's go to the do or die questions.
Yes.
Are you more rational or emotional?
I would say more rational.
Are you more on strategy or intuition?
Strategy.
More talker or listener?
Talker.
More practical or romantic?
Practical.
Team sports or individual sports?
Individual.
Trust your gut instinct or follow the advice of a trusted mentor?
Instinct.
Focus solely on local farm sustainability or advocate for global sustainable farming practices?
Ooh. Local.
Work with highly talented but unpredictable team members or less skilled but more reliable?
The second, yeah, definitely.
Accept help when struggling or handle challenges on your own to prove your resilience?
The second, yeah.
Innovation at the risk of failure or safety with guaranteed success?
Definitely the first.
Prioritize increasing farm productivity or enhancing the ecological biodiversity of your farm?
Yeah, the second one.
Accept government subsidies that might limit your farming choices or remain fully independent but financially constrained?
The second.
Focus on direct consumer sales or develop large-scale distribution with partnerships?
The first.
Last one. Seek formal agricultural education or continue learning through personal experience and informal studies?
That's an interesting. For now, I would say the second, but that might change over time. There might be a moment where I say, okay, now I just want to put everything in an actual academic way. But for now, I manage with what I learn myself. But there might be a moment where I want to underlay all my thinking with actual stuff from the real world, basically, from the academics and teachers and schools.
Do you see yourself as a bridge builder, or do you want to be?
No, not really.
What's next for the garden?
So we are organically growing our sales. So we have 4 revenue streams, and the first two, which is then the restaurants and the vegetable boxes, we want to increase them with 20%.
Why this number?
Because that is still manageable with the team we have, and we can still manage it ourselves. We can still oversee it. If we do more, which we can because the demand is there, then it's a different ballgame. It's also a possibility, but in a couple of years.
Why?
Because I still want to do it myself, because I like it. I'm not doing this to outsource everything to employees and interns. I just want to... I already experience me being not enough time in the garden. You know, I do this work because I like it. And now often I'm in the car, you know, like delivering to chefs, which is also very important. But in the end, I just want to be in the garden. Yeah. So 20% is good for both of the revenue streams. Then we have the third one is we have cut flowers. We sell bouquets of flowers, which you can pick yourself. We grow there also with 20%. And then we are tapping into a complete new business stream, which is workshops and trainings. We have a really nice shed, which is currently being renovated. And there will be an area where we can give workshops. We have written 3 concepts of workshops we will provide starting next year. And we're working on this this winter to create content. And we have to think about the sales and marketing strategy for those 3 concepts, and that's completely new business, and it's an add-on to our current revenue streams, and we have to see how this will work.
What's next for you as a person?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I often think about this, but to be honest, I just focus on the garden now, and I just see myself doing this, which is also quite interesting. If you think of working in a big firm, you always talk about strategy and long-term commitment and those kind of things. My commitment now is just in the garden and making sure that the garden is okay. And where that will end, I don't know. I just know that I really like this work and that I'm here and fully committed in making this a big success. So we continue with this. But this job is quite demanding for your body. I don't know. There needs to be this moment in time, and that's years and years ahead, that this becomes a bit heavy on the body, you know? And then what else? What are we going to do? But then I'm talking about 20 years. But still, it's interesting to think about this already, because when you work in the office, you don't think about this because you can do this job to your retirement. And with me, I can do it till my retirement, and I plan to do it because working in the garden is like super healthy for you. But I can't lift and bend as much anymore in 20, 30 years. I know this. So then we have to think about what else we will do. But for now, I just want to be better in what I do.
What inspired you lately and why?
Good question. I think if you look to the farm now, it's going pretty well, but I want to kind of get it more connected with the environment. So that's a more of a system approach, I would say. Sounds a bit fake, but whereby it's more self-sustaining. I think we still are putting too much inputs in it to get where it is, but I want to find a moment in time whereby it's also kind of self-controlling, whereby the biodiversity and soil life is so active that we, for example, don't have to put so much compost anymore or other materials that is just going And I see farms who are at that state, and that would be something really nice for me.
Like a real ecosystem.
Exactly, that's the word, yeah. Like an active ecosystem, which is kind of self-controlling. And that takes years, and you need that biodiversity. And still, it's highly productive, highly intensive gardening. So you always need certain inputs, but it would be nice if we can reduce those inputs to a minimum. And that is something I want to see. It's basically a bit of self-sufficiency. That would be really nice, yeah.
Last question. What gives you hope?
Yeah, that's also a good question. I see that a lot of people, if I look to my customers, okay, very practical. We send out a feedback form to our vegetable box people. Very practical example. About how they experienced last year. And everyone is so happy with the produce they eat. They said, after this, I can't go back to the supermarket. Oh, I'm so happy to give my money to a local guy instead of the big firms. And those are people who are working themselves in those environments. And seeing how they experience this, because in the end, it's just a cauliflower. But it's much more than that. And just opening up this way of thinking, this discours, basically, that is so interesting to see. And that gives me a lot of hope that also those people consume more natural, the natural way, and also tell this to their neighbors and to their family members. And that it's like a stain, which is slowly expanding. And that in the end, they also change their life. Like, oh, man. Why do I do this job? It's not good. Maybe I need to do something else. That just a little bit.
The ripple effect.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is slowly starting. And that really gives me hope that most people can change if they want. And that is really nice to see that. Yeah, I like that idea. That people are more happy and that we are taking better care of the world. And
ourselves.
Ourselves, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's, yeah, I think that gives me a lot of hope. That seeing people coming, it's so funny, when they pick up the veggie boxes, they come in the garden, nice car, straight from work. They're always super busy, you know, 5 meetings, blah, 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 blah. They're just going in a rush. And they come in the garden and you see them literally breathe in and out a couple of times big, you know, like, okay, man, relax. What is important now? And then they walk through the garden, they look at the pigs, they see us harvesting, and then you see them really, you know, just reflecting. That really gives me hope that they see what is important. Then the question is, do they actually going to do it? But that's up to them.
Thank you for today.
Thanks. I really liked it. Thank you, man.
That was my conversation with Thomas Verdel. His story highlights the power of bold decisions, like selling everything, to pursue a more meaningful life. He demonstrated how corporate tools like Lean Six Sigma can improve daily workflows, even in different environments, making work more enjoyable and efficient for his team and culture. And how yoga can be your mental shower for clarity and intention. One key takeaway? Growth often starts with trust in yourself, in others, and in the process. Take his advice. Don't be afraid to step off the beaten path. You might just find yourself. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to click the follow button. Rate the podcast, subscribe to the newsletter, and spread the word so we can continue to grow the Don't Waste Eye podcast. And remember, everyone struggles, and that's okay. But standing still prevents you from growing and reaching your potential. Keep moving forward, because the better you become, the more you'll inspire others. Don't waste your time, don't waste your eye.